Thanks very much. I once heard Richard Mabie, the great nature writer, say, "I'm a materialist." A materialist, describing his relationship with nature, and it's not being spiritual, and he's rather regretting the title of his book, Nature Cure. Or call me, he said, if you don't like that word, call me a matterist. If I'm a nature writer, as I suppose I am, I came as such out of Richard Mabie's overcoat. I am of his material, cut from his cloth. I think I'm a matterist too. I was last at the Medicine Unboxed Day in October 2017. Sam's theme that year was maps. I spoke about some springtime journeys that I'd taken in the company of springtime birds. I'd been a birdwatcher all my life and a writer on my birdie life for the last 15 years or so. My words were about movement and seasonality and the greening time of becoming for birds and for me. Words about being in time. My 15-minute contribution that day in Cheltenham was more personally significant, however, for it's marking the longest time that I'd stood up and remained on my feet for several weeks. The matter with me was 3 months before I'd been diagnosed with Parkinson's. Parkinson's that teaches that all walking is a kind of managed falling. Or as William Empson put it in a poem, refining the thought for a birdman like me, the heart of standing is you cannot fly. And 2 months before that, adding injury to illness, as it were, a kidney stone, a kind of nephritic moraine, had come to a halt on the way out of my right kidney with resulting pain, poison, and then sepsis. When I talked that day, I still had the stone in residence and knocking, but also a bypassing stent in place, all thanks to Mr. Kouparis and his team at North Bristol NHS. But despite my hopeful words then on the timely becomingness of spring for my best birds, which are redstarts, and for my being accommodated coincidentally with them, able in some ways to take part in their existence, as John Keats said of sparrows he watched from his window, I felt in many ways then beside myself and not at home. That sense of being beside myself in questionable accommodation might stand as a subtitle for my talk today. And sure enough, it has become in the intervening years my theme, my call sign, even my calling, and it remains so today. These last 5 years or so, I've been busy getting ready to be gone, or to put it another way, busy dusting myself. The word dust being apparently contradictory, marvelously so, to dust meaning to clear away, to dust meaning to mess up. And the same dust being one species, to my mind, of Mary Douglas's dirt, which she described in her memorable formulation as matter out of place. At that MU gathering, I'd not long been out of nappies, or rather the catheter I had to wear in hospital. I was on a ward with three other catheter wearers, Reg, Ron and Ray, that's their real names, and we all walked around with our bags strapped to our thighs or calves, like superannuated gunslingers at the So-So Corral. The medical staff called the Bloodstreet custard in my bag sludge, and sludge is part of my dust story still, what William Empson again called in a poem the waste that remains, particulate matter, wet, dry, airborne, waterborne, earthed. I'm writing a book, needless to say, on this subject that will be called Home Scars, and it will have three parts. First, an account of trying to make a new home for me with my wife and our new son in the southernmost house but one on the rocky, gritty, sandy Cape Peninsula in South Africa, my limping, wobbling steps along rockways and sandy shores with a young son, Adam, on my back or in a pushchair, the same Adam whose name comes from the Hebrew for earth or the Arabic for mud, with the same Adam beginning to make his way into a world of stoff, stoff which is the Afrikaans word for everything, including stuffing and dust. Second part of this book, I'll just have a slip of water, excuse me. Second part of this book will be an audit of 30 years of radio recordings stashed in what I know as my bat cave in Bristol, the leftovers from a career as a radio producer and a listening in to hours, days, months, years of the gritty, sonic substrate on all those tapes, the sounds captured behind the voices recorded, the wild track of wind, birdsong, traffic, city skylines, ocean sea wash, all that audible dust that our lives are embedded in. And third, and most explicitly for today, a journey around one corner of the west of England with my dead dad's ashes in a supermarket carrier, so-called bag for life, and the pouring out of him, a dusting of him at various salient spots. I was hoping for another slide here, but I've lost my pointer, sorry. It doesn't really matter. My parents spent their final decade of married life in Minehead in West Somerset. That was a mistake. We used to joke about the place being a last resort, and I thought of Minehead as being a kind of head mine to an emptying place. An emptying place, albeit one filled with stuff. My forgetful mother lives there still in the midst of all her family's baggage, but with an ever-diminishing sense of what any of it means. My father died there in 2020, aged 84, with his head still full of fantastical business futures, but increasingly walled up in the present between piles of paper. He was of the generation who printed off all his emails and kept all his old newspapers. They throbbed for him with a latent energy. Meanwhile, his own life, his own grasp of reality, was becoming ever more immaterial and unrealizable. He had fallen for a scam. He'd been a hopeless self-employed businessman since he was sacked from a managerial job in an insurance company, aged about 40. He never worked for anyone else again and earned no more than a few thousand pounds in 40-plus years of effort. My mother's teacher's salary paid for everything. He tried to sell insurance to caravanners. He tried to sell cardboard coffins to disaster-struck countries. He tried to sell an alternative to cat's eyes for road surface lighting. His children, me and my sister, ate up the high vitamin biscuits he could no longer find any malnourished takers for. And most recently, he remortgaged his home and tapped his wife's pension to send a cash sweetener every month to some oil-rich local leaders in northern Nigeria who had so much income from their wells that they thought, he believed, that should a decrepit man in his 80s working from a lashed-up laptop on his dining room table in a fading seaside town in the west of England send just a little money every month for what he understood was beers and cola, then they would turn on their oil dollar taps in return in his direction and millions would flow his way. He was sure it was going to happen. He got angry with his family when he would ask questions. I gave him money that I shouldn't. He was a fool, proud, arrogant, a fantasist, and I loved him, of course. Closing his bank account after his death in March of 2020, my sister discovered that our father had been paying about £100 or so every month to a Mr. Bartholomew Friday in Lagos. That my father, a castaway in multiple forms at Minehead, had a Mine Friday in his life set me off. My grief work, such as it would be a dusting pilgrimage. I would cast him away into some places meaningful to him and to me, work him and his stardust to earth, his matter going to ground and into the air, downstream and out to sea. These are the last grains. I keep him in an old Parkinson's medication box. There was no funeral for John Dee. He died of sepsis, the same that I'd survived after 4 months in the Somerset hospitals right at the beginning of the first UK pandemic lockdown. He was cremated without any service. Instead, in the autumn of 2021, when I was at last able to reserve his ashes, technically known, I gather, as cremains, from an undertaker in Minehead, I set off on a month-long dusting. A man in full, men in full. My mother and my sister didn't object to my body snatching and dispatching. I began on Dunkery Beacon, where he'd visited as a boy and taken me as a boy on a first birdwatching outing of great future-shaping significance for me, and from where most of the scenes of his life, from his Bristol childhood to his Minehead death, would have been visible. It was at Dunkery on day one that I ate him when the wind, the wild track, blew him back into my face with my feeble throw. A bone meal. I dribbled him later into the Avon Gorge, where he rescued me, age 13, and took over my paper round after I'd seen in front of me a man jump to his death, a man quite obviously not flying, from the Clifton Suspension Bridge. I added him to the mud at Sea Mills, downriver from there in the gorge, where he dated his future wife, my mother, and in the same place where Richard Long, great matterist artist, born in Bristol and still resident there, collects his Avon mud for his mud works. I have a fantasy that my dad might end up on the wall somewhere of the Richard Long work. Back in Minehead, where my father ended up on Mad Brain Sands, the true name again, the Mad Brain Sands, the nearest seashore to where he lived for his last years, I sent him out, a little biscuity heap of him, on a little ship of death, folded from some of his headed business paper that I'd salvaged from the wasp's nest of his abandoned office in his garden shed. There are sample coffins there too, I'm sure, but I haven't as yet been able to excavate them. In the garden next to the shed, on All Souls' Eve. Not that he was or I am a believer, no nature cure for either of us either. I sellotaped grains of him, like pollen sacks on a bee's leg, or sludge in a catheter bag, to the sides of 9 firework rockets, one for each of his decades. I bought them for their names. 3 were called Etna's Revenge, 6 were Insanity. I knew he wouldn't get into orbit. I knew he'd not fly, but fall as did Empedocles into Etna. But I hoped he might burn brightly for a moment as he briefly escaped his earthly lodgings and all of us watching from down below. Me, his widow, and also that night, 2 of his grandsons, my grown-up boys, one of whom's here today, I'm very pleased to say. They helped their Parkinsonian dad ignite the touch papers for his father. I had help from others as well. For practical advice on the IED I'd made of my dad, I turned to my uncle, my mother's brother, a pyrotechnician, amateur astronomer, and window cleaner. Bone, he said, would burn red. Watch for that. I'd also studied in books on my father's shelves 2 accounts of the life of his namesake, John Dee, the Elizabethan alchemist, scryer, and star reader. I'm not sure how much my father saw connections to the other Dee beyond their names. Both were smart and bookish people. My father would have liked that. But both were also sometimes on fool's errands after fool's gold. John Dee the First was known as a necromancer and a bigamist and fell far out of favor. My father half acknowledged that in himself, privately at least. He too had been an adulterer, and he described himself in a secret diary I found after he died as a fantasist too. He sort of knew what he was doing, although he kept on sending beer money to Bartholomew. Anyway, up he went, a demolition in 9 parts, stuff sorted, and he burned with a reddish fizz in the damp November dark. The next day, on the other side of the country, in another place where my dad was more than kind to me when I was starting out on my own escapes as a bird boy, I said my last goodbye to his dust. The Eel's Foot is a pub at the end of the Minsmere Sluice in Suffolk. My dad took me to stay in a cottage next door there when I was about 10. We went birdwatching at Minsmere, and I was transported to heaven on earth. When I was back this time, my walking was bad. I limped more than an eel's foot would, but I managed a bit of my dad into the sluice while 3 marsh harriers, earth-brown angels, buoyed over the drop. The end of him I poured from my yogurt pot urn into an envelope I'd taken from his wrecked home office. I put a card inside already, Quentin Blake's cartoon sketch of the more famous John Dee at some alchemical wizardry of dust. I addressed the envelope, Bartholomew Friday, Poste Restante, Lagos, Nigeria. And I wrote on the back of the card, this month's contribution. I licked the envelope and popped it in the red post box. Thank you.